You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickard. Coming up later, we'll hear about the call to action on climate change issued today by Pope Francis.
First, from unraveling the human genome to detecting disease, the ability to read DNA has radically changed how we look at life.
A new global effort is trying to map the entire planet's biocode, and this may have profound implications for understanding nature and how we fit into it.
Dawn Field joins us now. She's a research fellow of the Biodiversity Institute of Oxford and co-founder of the Genomic Observatories Network. She's the co-author of the new book called Biocode, The New Age of Genomics. Dawn, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
So biocode, what do we mean by that term?
Biocode. So a lot of people are talking about DNA as software. It's a nice analogy. It makes life run. It has the instructions, and it makes life. And so the biological code is something that's found on all of Earth. And we found that when we were looking at studies on DNA, it's impacting all aspects of life, whether it's human studies, medicine, agriculture, looking at biodiversity. It was all part of this one biological code. And so we figured that was a nice title for the book. We also toyed with making it the Planetary Genome Project, which is sort of what's going on now. But we stuck with biocode as the sum of all DNA on Earth.
Now, back in 2001, we had that first map of a human genome released, a huge achievement at the time. But now, wow, we're talking about trying to map the entire genome of more or less everything on the planet. How far has our understanding of DNA and genomes come since 2001?
Right, that's a great question. So a great point. The first genome was actually a composite of several people because they were worried about anonymity and they wanted diversity. And, of course, we realized quite quickly that the real value of genomics is looking at individual differences. So now they're talking about a million genome projects. And that kind of technology has brought down the cost of sequencing such that people in labs across the world can apply this technology to other species. So all life has DNA, and people are sequencing almost everything. And there's not one designated biocode project or planetary genome project, but people are looking into all avenues of life. And together, this is like sequencing the Earth.
And how far are we away from this, having effectively every species on the planet mapped, gene sequenced?
So it seems like we're doing a lot, and we are. There are lots of tens of thousands of genome projects now going on. And yet what's startling is that there are more than 10 million species on Earth, and we still don't know how many there are. And one of the problems in figuring this out is that most of life is invisible. So 99% of all genetic diversity is invisible, and it's the microbes, and they're on us. We've heard a lot about the microbiome, how they're in our guts, they help us live. But they're everywhere. They're driving metabolism of the oceans. Every second breath of oxygen you take is from a microbe in the ocean. They're pretty important, and we're starting to understand this with DNA. So we have huge treasure trove of DNA now building up in these public libraries of DNA, but we have a vast way to still go.
I want to key in on what you said about the ecosystem inside us. We think of ecosystems as, you know, a jungle or other biome, but people are starting to look at our intestinal flora and fauna as an ecosystem all of its own. What are we doing with mapping that out and the DNA sequences? What are we learning there?
So there's an explosion of interest. You have about 3 pounds of microbes in your gut. That's the same as your brain. And as people find out how much the gut influences behavior, how you eat, how you lose weight, how you gain weight, what your mood is, we're realizing how absolutely important that entire ecosystem is. And it's thousands of species. And again, the take-home message from this is that we're learning more and more about specific species, but most of them are unknown. So even in our own bodies, the biodiversity around us is overwhelming.
And you say in the book, this is part of what we're learning in DNA, how we're not separate from nature, how our DNA overlaps us as individuals with the individuals living inside us and with the rest of nature. What kind of perspective are we getting as we learn more and more about the DNA makeup of our planet?
That's what we tried to focus on the book. We both work in biodiversity genomics, so microbes in the ocean or microbes in a tropical island, and looking at systems. But what we found is more and more we were thinking about the human genome as sort of a marker and a vision for where we could go with all of genomics. So humans are just one species. We happen to know the most about them because we care the most, but we're sequencing almost everything around us. And we can't live in isolation. If we come back to your microbiome, we can show that it's quite stable in healthy individuals. So people have looked, for example, at an individual over the course of a year. And yet if you get food poisoning, for example, it can completely disrupt your microbiome, and we know how sick you get. And that's part of your environment. So we're learning these connections from a single organism up through to the planet, and that's where it gets really exciting. We're just getting the technology to sort of think and conceptualize how we might start looking at this entire biocode, this living system.
One thing that's exciting here is that there's too much science in a way for just the scientists. You point out that citizen science is playing a big role in this effort to map the planetary genome.
So we launched a project called Ocean Sampling Day, which involved lots of people around the world taking samples of ocean water and looking at microbes. And this was just one of many projects that also involved citizen scientists. So people can go out and help test the water for different parameters. But it's going beyond that. Many people are contributing their genomes or genomes of their pets. There's a kitty microbiome project going on. People really can get involved, whether it's through academic projects or whether it's through consumer genetics. Of course, you can pay money and have your own genome or your microbiome sequenced now. And it's this collective pool of information and this sort of bioliteracy that's growing that's really going to start to change things.
On the frontiers of all this, maybe efforts to create genomes, DNA sequences, viable ones, not created by nature, created by humans. How close are we to that?
So Craig Venter has already copied a living bacterium, so put the DNA into a computer, so to speak, synthesized it again, put it back into a bacterium and showed that he had a working organism, and he called her Cynthia. The trick is coming up with new organisms. But we talk about this in the book, that we have this tree of life. It's ancient. Life is 3.5 billion years old. And all of a sudden, we're on the cusp of potentially creating new life. And we've had recombinant DNA for a while, for example, growing insulin in E. coli. That's how most diabetics get their insulin. It's recombinant DNA, but we're moving steps farther. And some visionaries have put ideas on the table, like trees that glow in the dark, so that along streets you don't have to have electricity in the future, and this would be done with genetic engineering. So sort of the book of life is about to be written. We don't know how much of the tree of life we're going to add new, but the potential is certainly there.
Have we had the ethical conversations that we need to have before that happens?
A lot of people don't think we have yet, and the technology is going so fast. There's a lot of debate, especially around gene editing, these CRISPR-Cas sequences where you can target any gene in a genome and rewrite it in situ. And people have started to show that you can do this even in the human germline. And this is really starting to make people think about where could this technology go. It's not science fiction anymore. You could actually change humans as people are changing plants. There was a mosquito story with changing mosquitoes, the sex of mosquitoes, because only females bite. So now you can change their genes. They all become male, and you rid the world of different diseases carried by mosquitoes. Much of it could be great. It depends on how it is used. But there needs to be a very healthy debate about this kind of technology.
Well, it seems like, you know, if the space program were going this fast, I'd be talking to you from Alpha Centauri. Briefly, Dawn, is this an exciting time to be in genomics?
Absolutely. And this is the big message of the book, is despite all these fantastic advances, it's just starting. And it will continue to explode, we think, into the next decades. This is a century of biology, and genomics is at the heart of it.
Dawn, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
That was Dawn Field, research fellow of the Biodiversity Institute of Oxford. She's the co-author of the new book, Biocode, The New Age of Genomics.